I try to ignore the flittering noise above me and carry on with my practice. Bed. Chair. One screwed in the floor. Window. My watch. Loads of words to practice with. You see, I know what the words mean. I know how to write them. I just can't say them. No more than the moth can. Not since Mum died. I look at my watch again. The chunky green digital one she gave me. The last present I ever got from her. My favourite present I ever got from her. Even Dad nicked it once, because he thought it was nifty, and I had to hassle him to give it back. I'm lucky to still have it. We aren't meant to keep anything personal at the Hall, but I kicked and bit so they couldn't take it. I flick the picture onto the screen. It's a summer afternoon in our garden, behind our house in the city. You can just see the sun shining on the River Ams, gleaming beyond the top of the back wall, and far away on the other side, the skyline of tall glass towers. Premium. City of the South and capital city of the island. When the rest of the world grew too hot and cracked open in the sun, everyone came to live on this cold grey rock, the island, in their hundreds and thousands. If only it was hot here sometimes. The weather is never good. But for me, this picture has just always been where our home is, where Dad is, and where one day I know I'll return. Right now, though, I'm more interested in the person in the garden. It's my mum, Laura, before she got sick. She has long curly hair the colour of shiny new coins, and she's laughing at something Dad or I have said. I used to be able to talk normal, you see, like everyone. Mum and I talked a lot. Dad and I talked a bit. Now, though, it's like trying to learn the hardest language in the world. I know I can inside. It's just when I try to speak, nothing happens. The more I try, the harder it gets. They want to make me talk again here. Dr. Fredericks, with his tests. But it's not working. People still stare at you funny as you go red in the face. Or sometimes they laugh and make up what they think you were going to say. I'd rather try and talk to a varmint, thanks. There's enough of them, that's for sure. Flapping moths that circle round lights, like the one in my room right now, and spiders lurking in corners, or cockroaches scuttling around by the bins. All the useless insects and pests that the Red Eye left behind. We don't even bother with their real names half the time. Varmints is all they are. And I have practiced talking to them, as it happens. Not that you're meant to go near them, even though everyone knows they're the only thing that can't get the virus. So I haven't reported this flapping one in my room, because I like practicing with him there buzzing around. He won't talk back, but at least he doesn't laugh or stare. I can almost pretend he's listening. I do that a lot. Right, varmint, I say to myself in my head. Let's see what you think I'm saying this time. So I'm just about to have a go at saying b-e-d again, or at least the b, or even a noise that sounds like a b, when the speaker hidden in the ceiling splutters into life. You can almost see the spit fly out of the holes. The varmint whirls angrily away. He doesn't like it any more than I do.
Calling all students. Your first meal of the day is served in the yard. You have 10 minutes.
There's a clank as he replaces the microphone in its stand, and a hum as he forgets to turn it off, and I hear his heavy breathing for a minute before he remembers and flicks the switch. Dr. Fredericks, the governor. He can give himself as many titles as he likes. He's still just an ugly man in a white coat with a comb over whose breath smells of sweets. The day after they brought me here, bundled out of my home in the middle of the night, I gathered with all the new kids in the yard while he stood behind a lectern reading words off a screen, his jacket flapping in the aircon.
Good afternoon, boys and girls. Welcome to Spectrum Hall. You have been sent here because your parents want to, forget about you. Your, schools can no longer tolerate you. So they have asked us to help. Because we are a special institution, dealing with special cases like yours. And I'll tell you now how it's going to, work.
His amplified words bounced off the walls.
Look behind you at the sea. It's the filthiest and most polluted sea in the world, we're told.
He stared down at us through his bottle-top glasses and flicked away a loose strand of greasy hair as we gazed out of the glass walls behind us at the waves chopping and crashing at the cliffs. But I didn't believe Dad wanted to forget about me. 6 years later, I still don't.
There are two ways out of here. Through our front gates as an improved and functioning member of society, or off these bally cliffs and into the sea. So either learn to modify your behaviour, or jolly well learn to dive.
I haven't learned to do either yet. I pull on my trackies, shove my feet into my trainers and strap on my watch. Then there's a beep, and the light in my door goes red, orange, then green, before sliding open with a hiss. The fat warden is standing there in his crumpled purple jacket and trousers, my door key card dangling on a strap from around his wrist.
Come on, James,
he mutters, scratching his hairy chin.
I haven't got all day.
I'm not surprised. With so much sitting on your bum and sleeping to do, I think. That's one of the advantages of not being able to speak. You never get in bother for talking back. I step out into the corridor and wait. One by one, the other doors along from me beep and slide open. And out come the other inhabitants of Corridor 7. Boys and girls my age, all in trackies and trainers like me. Their hair unbrushed, their faces blank. We look at each other, and then the warden silently points to the other end of the corridor. I feel his eyes boring into my back as we walk past him along the passage and into the open lift.